Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome into episode 48 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. I am Tyler Yaremchuk. He is Cameron Lewis. And this podcast, as always, is brought to you by our friends at DoorDash, where you can use the promo code BJNPODDD. It gets first-time users of the app 25% off and no delivery fees. Coomzy, how you doing? Happy that we're happy that we're done with the trop until the ALDS?
Well, I know who's dashing to the door right now. The door of the fucking trop is everybody on the Blue Jays. Yeah. Because nobody wants to play there because fuck that place. It's cursed and it's awful. And I want them to fire it into space. And I never want to see a baseball game there played ever again.
Yeah, you are definitely not alone in that. Even the wins at the trop, they don't come easy and they're stressful. No. And it just always feels like the worst possible thing is going to happen. There's a lot to get to here from this three game series between the two teams. Just for the sake of the listener knowing what's going on here, third game's not done yet. We're already recording this. We saw Pete Walker come out of the dugout, get all fired up. We said, fuck it. It's 7-1. Let's just start this podcast now. Pete Walker's done. So we're done watching the series as well.
Yeah, 100%. We can't watch. That's the rules. You can't continue watching a baseball game if Pete Walker has been ejected. There's no point.
I still have the game on here in my office. So if they come back, this will be the most electric podcast ever because we'll be sitting here live as they fucking come back on the Tampa Bay Rays. But they're down 7-1 at the bottom of the eighth. Nate Pearson just picked up a strikeout. Good enough time to record a podcast. And let's get into 3 up, 3 down for this one presented to you by Twig and Berries, where you can use the promo code NATION15. Gets you 15% off twigandberries.ca. Upgrade your wardrobe before the fall. I think today is like, what is it? What do they call it? The autumn solstice or something?
Yeah, it's the first day of fall today. It's summer's over officially. It's, we're marching right towards winter now, which is kind of depressing, but at least we have competitive fall baseball to worry about before we get into full-on winter sadness mode.
The first down in 3 up, 3 down is going to be the god-awful strike zone that we had to deal with. I have a funny feeling that might have something to do with Pete Walker getting as fired up as he did at the umpires today. But that was dog shit, and it cost them game one.
Game one, yeah, it did. We had a chance here to have what could have been like an iconic comeback at the drop. I mean, it never happens. Never. I feel like many years ago there was a game they came back and scored like 6 or 7 runs in the ninth inning. I remember it vaguely. It must have been like 2008-09 kind of thing, but like nothing in recent memory. But so right at the beginning of the ninth inning, George Springer doubles, then Marcus Semien hits a home run to make it 6-4, and then Vladdy walks, and you know, David Robertson struggling, can't throw a fucking strike, and then this JT Chargois guy comes in. It's the same thing. This guy can't throw a fucking strike. He has no idea where the ball's going. Bobichet's batting, and Tampa's pitcher gets a fortunate call that's well outside of the strike zone that fucks Bo's at bat. So now he has to expand. Same thing for Teoscar as well. Pitch way down low. He ends up striking out again because the strike zone's been expanded. And then Danny Jansen keeps the game going. There's guys at first and second. Gurriel takes a walk. Bases are loaded for Breivik Valera. And he sees like 7 pitches in the at bat and doesn't swing at anything, unfortunately. But again, he should have walked because a ball was called a strike, and it was infuriating because, I mean, this isn't a game they should have won at all because they weren't particularly good in the game. The start by Robbie Ray wasn't very good. We'll get into that in our next point because why that might have happened, there's a reason for it, but again, we'll get into it right away. But then also the, you know, depth relievers weren't able to keep the score low for the offense to come back in, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that Tampa's relievers really wanted to blow this thing, and the umpires did not want to let it happen, and it was fucking infuriating to watch.
Yeah, that was just the annoying part, is the strike zone was bad all series, particularly in game one. It was terrible. And the three worst calls of the game, I follow that, as I'm sure everyone listening to this does, that umpire scorecard Twitter account, which is great. They said the umpiring cost, the balls and strikes cost the Jays 1.94 runs in that ball game. And three of the worst calls, or the three worst calls, all came in the ninth inning as well. Like, it was just unbelievable how terrible that was. And yeah, the situation should have been Valero walked. It's 6-5, bases loaded, two outs. And I mean, Jake Lamb was coming up, but you're probably pinch hitting for him, right?
Yeah, it would have been Lamb, and then after that would have been Springer was right on deck. So yeah. If somehow Lamb gets on base and keeps it going, then it would have been Springer with an opportunity to have another dramatic moment. Yeah. And what he would have done was hit a grand slam.
Clearly.
It would have happened. Yeah.
But Lamb, the strike zone, and not even just for the Jays, like that entire series, the strike zone was really, really bad. It was large.
The most frustrating thing for me was that Tampa's relievers, the relievers, like these guys who can't throw strikes and don't know where the ball's going, are getting the benefit of the doubt. And they're getting all these, you know, borderline, some of them weren't even borderline. Some of them were like, there was the one that was down low. I think it was Teoscar. It was like 3 inches below the strike zone. That was called a strike. But then earlier on in the game, Robbie Ray was getting nothing, like hitting corners, nothing. And then Nate Pearson came in as a reliever. Same thing. He was getting nothing. It was infuriating.
And the other thing too, like, I get these umpires have very difficult jobs. I'm not trying to say they don't, but you know, when it's a 95 mile an hour slider right on the corner and it's a 50-50 call, like, I can get it. But like the Hernandez one, and then especially that Valero one, that is a dead straight fastball right down the middle and about 3 inches above the zone. That is the easiest call to make when the pitch is not moving at all. And it is a strike right, or not a strike, it should have been a ball, right down the middle of the plate. Like, that's an easy pitch to see. There's no excuse to make that bad of a call in that situation, especially at a point when it's like a critical time in the game. That's when you should be like on high alert as an umpire. It was just beyond frustrating. But that's our first down. Something else that got me nice and fired up was what happened with Kevin Kiermaier, where he slides into home plate. Alejandro Kirk's playbook, if you want to call it that, falls out of his wrist guard. Kiermaier looks at it. I mean, I'm convinced that when he looked at it, when he was sitting in the dirt, he quickly realized, oh shit, this is theirs, and scooped it up. He then fully admitted to knowing it was the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays sent someone over to go get it, and the Rays weren't going to give it back. Cam, where do you come out on this? Is this just, you know, gaining a competitive advantage, and yeah, you see it, you're going to pick it up and use it to your advantage, or is this cheating?
It is cheating, yeah. I mean, but it's old school cheating. It's you know, it's the same thing as you hit a leadoff double and you have a guy at second base and then you're intercepting signs and maybe relaying it to the guy batting. It's cheating. It's not the best thing ever. It's not great. But if it was one of the guys on, if let's say for example, Jake Lamb slid into home and he grabbed Tampa's playbook, and the Jays teed off on Tampa's pitch the next thing, we'd think it was fucking hilarious, right? Like, we'd all be laughing. We'd love it. Like, nobody, none of us would be sitting there being like, ah, this is not how I want to win. This is old school cheating. This is not Houston Astros cracking signs.
No, it's not
banging
that.
And, you know, putting microchips in their players' brains and telepathically telling them when a slider is going to be coming. No, this is old school cheating, and it's not the end of the world. It's, I don't know, if you're a catcher on the Blue Jays, memorize all this shit and don't have it written down so somebody can copy the answers on your test, right? Like, you're putting yourself in a situation where somebody can cheat off of you because you literally have your fucking game plan written out on a piece of paper, right? Like,
yeah, the thing that kind of confuses me a little bit is, like, okay, so let's say the Jays sent like a bat boy over or whatever to go get the piece of paper back, and the Rays are like, mm-hmm. we didn't do it, or no, we're not giving it back. Maybe baseball needs to, because everyone uses it. You can say if you're the Jays, you want your catcher to not have it, but like every outfielder in the game has a cheat sheet. Every catcher, and I shouldn't say every catcher, majority of catchers have one. Every pitcher's got it in their hats. They were talking on the broadcast about how the Jays travel with a fucking shredder now so they can shred these things after the game and no one's picking them up out of the garbage can. Like, it's intense. Maybe like this shouldn't happen again. This was quite like the one, not maybe not one in a million, but something along those lines. Like, it's a very rare occurrence, but in the future, maybe the team just has to go to the umpire and be like, hey, we got video proof. They took our fucking piece of paper. Can you tell them to give it back? But like, again, I guess it is closer to the lines of like old school cheating with a new school kind of flair to it. I was pissed off because I just hate the Tampa Bay Rays, and this gave me another reason to hate Kevin Kiermaier. So that's why it really pissed me off, because it's just like a fucking course. These grease balls found a way to do this, and Kevin Kiermaier with his smug look picking it up in the dirt and being like, nice. Then even after, when he was like, it's September, what do you want me to do? I'm not going to give it back. I'm trying to get an advantage. I was just kind of like, man, yeah, it would have been hilarious if the Jays did it. And I'm being an absolute homer here. I fully recognize that. Oh, yeah. Like, go fuck yourself, man. It's greasy.
Oh, yeah. We can sit here and... I think the fair play for us to do here is bitch about it, because fuck the Rays and fuck the Trop. This is the exact kind of thing that would happen against this team. We can bitch about it, but I think we also have to acknowledge if this happened in our favor, we would think it was the funniest thing ever. It would be hilarious. We'd love it.
So
we'd be all about it.
So where do you come out on this? Kevin Kiermaier comes to bat in a 7-1 ball game. Ryan Barucki steps up, doesn't throw at his head, plunks him right in the ribs. It's a 7-1 game. Kiermaier was being greasy a couple nights before. Is it the way I love the game going? No. You know, you don't want guys being intentionally thrown at, but at the same time, if you're going to be greasy and cheat and be smug about it, you might get hit in the fucking ribs, man. I don't know.
I'll say this. Like, okay, there's a handful of things I have to say here, because there's a lot going on in this situation. We can't sit here and get super excited about Ryan Barucki throwing at Kevin Kiermaier in, what, the eighth inning of the third game of the series? So
when you're getting fucking pumped.
Yeah, so a full day after this whole thing happened. They're waiting until the very end. They're not seeing the Rays again this year. They might see the Rays in the division series, whatever. But this is exactly what we made fun of relentlessly the Texas Rangers doing back in 2016. They waited until... correct me if I'm wrong on this, the way that I remember 2016 playing out is the Rangers came to Toronto early, and then the Jays went to Texas to play a four-game series, and Texas waited until the end of that series to plunk Jose Bautista. So it was after they had played, it was the end of the seventh time they had played each other that they hit this guy for doing the bat flip in the division series. And we ripped on them relentlessly for it, because that's just bitch made shit. Like, you
a little bit different though. Like, the Jays, it's not like it's next season and they're hitting Kevin Kiermaier. Like, it's within the series. I mean, we're now at the point of arguing about the unwritten rules of baseball, which is always but
yeah, I'm just saying, for the sake of consistency, like, we have to call a spade and be like, this is kind of a bitch made move. Like, you waited all the way till the very end. But that being said, I'm also thrilled that it didn't happen in game two. Like, it would have been monumentally stupid if Alec Manoah, who's already been suspended this year for hitting a guy, went ahead and plunked Kevin Kiermaier, who can't fucking hit worth a lick. This guy sucks. Like, he sucks. Don't put him on base. Like, he grounded into a double play with Manoah pitching last night. And that's exactly how you get back at him, right? Like, I don't hate what Ryan Barucki did. I'm glad that Alec Manoah didn't do it, because he's more important to the roster. Barucki doesn't matter if he gets suspended. Who the fuck cares? He's been terrible this year. But you have to say, like, it is a little bitch made to wait until the very end to do this, because now Tampa really doesn't have much of an opportunity to get back at them. At least they didn't wait until the bar. I mean, they have the top of the ninth inning, but really.
Now the game just ended, so they didn't do anything back. I get it. It's kind of a bit of a bitch move, but it's also a bitch move to kind of pick up the other team's card from home plate and then, like, hide it and not give it back. So, like, I don't know. I don't love it, but I kind of sat there and, you know, I didn't necessarily, like, I didn't laugh about it or whatever, but I'm just kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you kind of had it coming to you. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a bitch move or whatever, but, like, you had it coming to you, and you're right. At least it wasn't Manoah going out and doing it and getting, like, a 6-game suspension or a 10-game suspension right now, because they really can't afford that. But they can't afford to lose Ryan Barucki for 5 games, I think, because he hasn't been good.
Yeah, if anyone's going to do it, that's who it is. Like, you don't want Nate Pearson or Julian Merriweather doing this. You don't want Jordan Romano doing it. You don't want Alec Manoah doing it. You don't want Robbie Ray doing it. You want one of your late bullpen whatever arms doing it. And Barucki was the guy. Good on him if he feels good about himself for doing it. I don't know. Sure, why not? Like, I don't hate it. I don't love it. I'm kind of mutual on this kind of thing.
Yeah, me too. It's a part of sports, right? Like, it's a bit of a rivalry now. I mean, there has been a rivalry for years between these two sides, and this only adds a little bit of fuel to it, and it will be absolutely electric if these two meet up in the ALDS, because now there's some fuel to this whole fire.
It's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know if I I don't know if I could even handle that. It would just be whatever. Let's keep moving along here. In game three, before we got to Ryan Barucki throwing at Kevin Kiermaier in a 7-1 game, let's get to why it was 7-1. And Ross Stripling, who we loved ripping on early in the season and then had to eat our words on a little bit, he was back to being bad today.
Yeah, this has been a roller coaster ride. I mean, Stripling was terrible at the beginning of the year, and then he worked with Pete Walker and figured something out because he was tipping his pitches or something and sort of pulling his glove closer to himself, and he was really good. He had a whole string of great starts, and then he went on the injured list, kind of disappeared for a while, and then since he's come back, he's just been really bad. It's kind of been him piggybacking off of Hyunjin Ryu. Neither of them have been effective, and now, you know, Ryu's on the injured list with his shadow injury that isn't actually an injury. Julian Merriweather starts the game, navigates through the first inning, and then Stripling comes in, you know, after the opener, and it's supposed to make life easier for him, right? He gets to start with the bottom of the order. He has a pretty good go, and then he comes out and just starts fucking batting practice. Just 5 earned runs, only records 4 outs. It was just absolutely exactly not what the team needed right now, because they had to burn through, what, like 1, 2, 3, 4 different relievers plus Merriweather, so it was a 5 reliever game at the end of a series, and like exactly what they didn't need. Like, they need to have a rested group of relievers going into this very important series in Minnesota, and now they don't have that at all.
Yeah. The nice part, if you want to call it that, is, like, you know, aside from Pearson, no one there is really too important, much of a key cog to the operation. Anthony Castro showed actually some really good stuff. He pitched 2 1/3. He didn't allow a single hit. And he didn't walk anyone either. So maybe you got to see a little something from Anthony Castro. Not that I expect him to factor into things much down the stretch here, but Ross Stripling, yeah, you needed more from him than that, and they didn't get it. At the end of the day, they walk out of this 6-game run here against the Tampa Bay Rays at 500. That's not bad. Like, I don't know. I would have loved for them to win today, and we'd be sitting there going, hell yeah, they went 4-2, but you're playing the top team in your division. And you went 500 over 6 important games against them. That's okay in my opinion. I'm not like pissed off about it.
No, I'm not angry about this series at all, to be totally honest with you. Like, after the first game, it was kind of like, you know, if they sneak out of this at the drop with one win, that's fine. It's not ideal. Like, we don't know what's happening in the out-of-town scoreboard just yet, because the Yankees and Red Sox start in like half an hour. But yeah, there's a fair chance, given who those two teams are playing, that the Jays are out of the playoff spot going into Minnesota. But they still have, I mean, they still have the advantage here based on their schedule. I'm going 3-3 in the 6 against Tampa. If you had told me at the beginning of those games that's what would happen, I would 100% take it.
Let's get into the ups here before we get to some other topics here. The game they won was in a start from Alek Manoah, and he didn't have his A stuff, and it wasn't even really close to his A stuff. He ended up walking 6 batters. He did rack up 7 strikeouts, but he walked 6 batters. He only gave up 2 runs, though. He had to throw a lot of pitches, though. It wasn't pretty. He was grinding. There was runners on base almost every inning. But he found a way to get through 6 innings against the Tampa Bay Rays and only give up 2 earned runs. Like, despite the fact he didn't have his good stuff, and it wasn't an electric start from Manoah like we've seen at points throughout the season, I'm still really impressed with the way he was able to just kind of put his head down and get through that start.
Yeah, absolutely. That was huge. That was one of the biggest starts they've had this year, in my opinion. Like, you know, you had on Monday, Robbie Ray, your ace, go to the mound and not pitch very well at all. Struggled. His velocity was down. Then they stole his strategy sheet, and that made life more difficult. And the strike zone was fucked. There was all this, all that. And then Manoah comes out in the second game, and it really is like a must-win situation, because you kind of know the Wednesday game. You have like the bullpen going against Tampa, and it's going to be their bullpen too. And their bullpen's really good. And their offense is really good. Like, they're obviously going to tee off on Stripling. We all know what's going to happen. And, you know, they did. So the second game was a must win. And Manoah came through 6 innings with, like you said, like, not his best stuff. Like, he navigated 6 fucking walks and still only allowed 2 earned runs, which is insane, because the Rays are one of those teams where as soon as you put guys on, they score, especially at the trot, because they have their weird Devil Ray magic going on there. And somehow, some way, I've like never seen a Blue Jays pitcher do this. They navigated the tightrope amazingly at the drop. It was like a hell of a thing to witness, because I swear I've never seen that before.
Second up here from this series is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. continuing his hot play in September. He hit another two home runs in this series, and courtesy of Sportsnet stats, Lourdes Gurriel is now one RBI shy of tying the Blue Jays franchise record for most ribbies in September. He's one back of Kelly Gruber, who did it in 1990. He had 30. He's got seven more games now to do it, and he probably will. This is just an all-time run from Lourdes Gurriel Jr. this month.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. This is exactly what the team needed. I mean, we talked about this in the last podcast as well. Like, they have their big five at the top of the lineup, and the big five, if we're being totally honest, has not been a big five recently because George Springer, I mean, save for that double there in the first game of the series that came right before Semien's home run, has been pretty much invisible. Like, he's obviously not playing at 100%, but ever since Springer's been struggling, Gurriel's been hitting how you'd expect Springer to hit. So that's a huge thing to compensate and a huge way to stretch the lineup out. And it's great. I mean, like, it would be sick to see that from him over a full season, mm-hmm. but you know, we all know how streaky this guy is, but it's great that we finally got this because, you know, earlier on at the beginning of the year, I remember there was a bunch of us talking about, like, does this guy even fit on the team? Like, what does he do? Like, he isn't that great in the field. He's not hitting right now. What's the point? And then, you know, he comes through and explodes and just goes nuclear. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's right. That's what this guy does. He goes and puts up, you know, 1,000 OPS in like August and September. And that's such a game changer for the team.
And yeah, hopefully he can keep it rolling here. They got a big four gamer coming up here against Minnesota. I call it a big four gamer, not because of the opponent, but because of the time of year it is. There's only 10 games left in the season here. This is fucking go time. Like, you kind of have to go. What do you need to go here? 7-3 down the stretch if you want to make the playoffs?
It's Minnesota for four, and then it's a head-to-head against the Yankees that I think might honestly decide who makes the playoffs. And then the other positive we have is the Jays are playing Baltimore to finish things off in October while the Yankees have to play the Rays. And the Rays are in an interesting spot because they haven't locked anything up because they're like a game ahead of Houston or two games ahead of Houston for best spot in the American League. So these games actually matter to them too.
Yeah. So the Rays clinched a playoff spot today, I think. They officially clinched a playoff spot. Josh Goldberg of Sportsnet tweeting out that the Rays have either clinched a playoff spot against or eliminated the Blue Jays directly in three straight seasons. He adds that's pretty on brand, and I would tend to agree with him. But yeah, the Rays still have a lot to play for. Like you said, they're trying to grab that top spot in the American League. You want home field advantage all the way throughout the playoffs, especially when you play at the fucking Trop, and that's the advantage that it is. So the Rays will still have something to play for as they go up against the Yankees in that final series of the season. The other thing that's really working in the Blue Jays' favor here this week, again, we don't know what's going to happen tonight in the series finales for the Red Sox and the Yankees, but actually the Red Sox don't play tonight, I believe, do they? Or do they?
Taiwan Walker for the Mets going up against Chris Sale. Okay. And then for the other game, it's some guy named Hearn for Texas going up against Corey Kluber.
Okay. But the other good thing is this weekend, while the Jays are playing the lowly Twins, the Yankees and Red Sox are going head-to-head as well. So if you can just dominate the Twins this weekend, you're putting yourself in a fantastic spot because then you're gaining a couple of games on either the Yankees or the Red Sox and potentially gaining a game on the other one, however that's going to break out. I know it's confusing to sit there and try to think about. But this is a big weekend coming up. And when you look at who the Jays have coming up in the rotation, we'll get to that in a second. There's reason to be very optimistic about what could be happening here. Let's wrap up three up, three down, though. The Pete Walker meltdown was great to see. I love this man. They could make him the manager, and I would be happy seeing him get that fired up. Fired me up.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't know. Like, this is, I don't even
it's
really
such
know
a throwaway third up.
Yeah, it's a throwaway third up. Like, I just put it in the notes because it was happening right as we were starting, and I was like, fuck yeah, Pete Walker. This guy rocks. This guy's sick. Honestly, just the up in general is just Pete Walker.
Pete Wog, yeah. He deserves a little bit more love here. That's three up, three down, presented to you by Twig and Berries. Twigandberries.ca, free shipping in Canada on orders over $75. Some other stuff to get to here. Buck Martinez on the broadcast making it sound like George Springer might return to center field this weekend against the Minnesota Twins. He and Dan Schulman were speculating on whether or not Springer was still wearing a knee brace in this last game against the Tampa Bay Rays, and Schulman kind of said it looked like he wasn't wearing a knee brace anymore. So when you watch George Springer hit, and I mean, he was brutal in the last series against Minnesota, and he wasn't good in this series against the Rays either. He went 1-for-4 in game one. He went 1-for-3 with a walk in game two, and in this series finale, he managed to go 0-for-5. So you watch him and you go, doesn't look like he's getting any healthier. And I just kind of accepted that, you know, he was going to play with the rest of this year at like 70 to 80%, whatever he's at right now. But them making it sound like Springer could actually be getting healthier and could go back into center field, that's huge if he's actually ready to take that step.
Yeah, that's ideal because we talked about this last time, and it's the best lineup composition for the Jays obviously involves Springer in the outfield because it opens up the DH spot for Alejandro Kirk, who I think the team is somewhat uncomfortable with using as a catcher.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he's got butterfingers and he can't hold on to his fucking strategy card. That's why they don't want him catching every day. Because if they go into Minnesota in the first game and Kirk's catching and he drops the strategy card, they're fucked, right? It's game over.
Series over, yeah. Season over.
Season over. It's game over. It's it. But no, like seriously, like it's, you know, opening up the DH spot is huge for this team because when was the last time, you know, Bo Bichette or Marcus Semien had a day off the field? Like July?
Yeah.
I swear, like, when was the last time one of these guys...
They were talking about that. Shulman was talking about that. Like, Semien's played, I think, like, every game, and he's only DH'd, like, once or twice or something like that. Like, this guy's been playing a crazy amount of baseball, and, yeah, like, against... You're not resting anyone right now, let's be real. There's 10 games left in the season, but, you know, let's say you win the first three against Minnesota, and, yeah, maybe you DH Semien for the last one. There's also some talk, Dan Shulman was saying, maybe they get Kevin Biggio back right away. Wow. That could give you an opportunity. Not that I love the idea of Biggio playing important games right now when he's been out for like 2 months. But like, you know, if Biggio's there, you can put him at second. You can DH Semien, and that's all because Springer's in center field and it opens up that spot. So the lineup flexibility could return if Springer's back in center field against the Twins. And you shouldn't underestimate how important that is.
Yes. Yeah, it's literally how this roster is composed. They built this team with the idea of having, you know, a permanent DH. That's why in the offseason, when there was the word that they had acquired Michael Brantley in free agency, it didn't really make any sense because they just simply didn't want to have somebody as the always DH because you want to let Vlad DH sometimes, you want to let Bo DH sometimes, you want to let Gurriel, who's kind of a mess in the outfield, DH sometimes, blah, blah, blah. And it was the same thing with, you know, there was talk, I remember before the trade deadline, maybe they'll go out and acquire Nelson Cruz. And again, the talk always was like, how do you go ahead and acquire an exclusive DH? Because how do you spin the rest of your guys around and put them in the DH spot? And now we're seeing exactly what happens with this team when somebody's locked into the DH spot and results in Alejandro Kirk sitting on the bench for fucking 6 days in a row, or, you know, Corey Dickerson playing center field, just shit you don't want to see.
The out of town scoreboard here, because we know that's a massive story. Like we already hit on Red Sox and Yankees. They're not going to finish up their series till later tonight. We're recording this right after the Jays finished up against the Rays. But last night, it was the Red Sox picking up a victory. Yankees also found a way to win as well, 7-1 against the Texas Rangers. God, the Texas Rangers are terrible. Yes. And the Yankees also won game one of that series. And it's just a two-gamer for the Red Sox against the Mets. So they didn't get any help on the out-of-town scoreboard, and they dropped 2 out of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays. So not a great week for the Toronto Blue Jays, especially with that out-of-town scoreboard. The way things sit right now, Yankees and Toronto tied for that second wild card spot. It's either going to be the Jays are half a game back of the Yankees with a game in hand, or they're half a game up on the Yankees with a game in hand. They're also 2 back of the Boston Red Sox, but it is worth noting that they have 2 games in hand, and that could quickly become a third, or that will become a third game in hand after tonight. So some chances here. Sorry, fuck, 1 game in hand. God, my math.
Yeah, it'll be today. 2 games in hand after tonight again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, it'll be...
Oh, this is making me dizzy to look at. No, it's only going to be 1 game in hand. They played the same amount of games right now, and then they'll make up that game on Thursday because the Red Sox and Yankees are both not playing tomorrow.
Yes, you are correct. Yes. Okay. And then Oakland and Seattle are both 2.5 back. We apologize for you listening at home having to deal with us figuring that out on the fly. It's confusing.
We are way too stupid for this shit. I'm just seeing 87s, 67s, 85s, and 65s, and it's making me dizzy. I'm not built for this. I'm built for speaking and drinking alcohol, and I'm not built for math.
The Red Sox have picked a hell of a time to rattle off a 6-game win streak, though, and that is incredibly frustrating to watch because I've been convinced all year that they were going to go on a 6 or 7-game losing streak at the right time, and that just isn't happening right now.
Oh, no, that would have been perfect, but I think, you know, we wanted so badly for the Red Sox to be frauds, but they just aren't.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like, neither the Yankees or the Red Sox are bad. They're both pretty good. And it is what it is. The Jays are going to have a good finish here. They can't rely on anybody else to get them into the playoffs. The reality is they have 10 games left. Yep. Seven of them are against teams that are complete dog shit. One's against a team that's literally, they're competing with for a spot. They're in control of their own destiny here. They got to win these games. Go like 8-2.
Yep.
It's very doable.
All right, let's dig into what is coming up next, and it is brought to you by the Sports Closet. The Jays have four in Minnesota, and maybe you want to look a little bit fresh for it. Head to thesportscloset.ca. Jerseys, hats, hoodies, and more. Our new friends at the Sports Closet. Check them out. All right. The big story here is the rotation, kind of, I think. I think this is the big story. So they're going to go Matt's in game one, Barrios in game two, Ray in game three, Manoah in game four. So maybe the story isn't necessarily what they're going to do against Minnesota. But after that, things do get interesting. And it's all a part of what's coming up next. So we're putting it in this segment. But they have an off day Monday, which is important because that means they could potentially either skip a Steven Matz start or keep Hyunjin Ryu out of things if they want to kind of optimize who they're putting out against the Yankees, right?
Yeah. So basically the way things work and the way the Jays have talked about it is they want Robbie Ray to pitch every fifth day on his normal rotation, no matter what. So based on that off day, somebody's going to get skipped so that Ray can pitch the Thursday finale against the Yankees, which is ideal. You want him lining up in that situation. He's the best pitcher on the staff. So it goes against Minnesota, like you said, Matz, Barrios, Ray, Manoah. That's, you know, as of right now, pretty much the best you can do with the team. And then that puts them in a situation. So Monday's off and then it's Tuesday and Ryu's eligible to come off the injured list at that point. So he could start game one. Otherwise, it's Matz starting on normal rest. And then also on normal rest are Barrios on Wednesday and Ray on Thursday. And so depending on what happens with the Ryu and Matz situation is maybe you skip Matz and then Matz starts the series against Baltimore on Friday, which would be Alek Manoah's normal spot. And then you bump him to start Saturday so he has an extra day of rest. That's kind of what we're looking at here.
I really do think it all comes down to sort of how things are playing out at that point, right? Like I don't expect them to sit there right now and be like, okay, we need to decide in this moment if it's going to be Ryu or Matz going in game one against New York or what's going to happen there, if we're going to split them up and give everyone in the rotation an extra day rest or whatever. Because if you roll through, you're going Matz, Barrios, Ray, Manoah against a Minnesota Twins team. Like there is a realistic chance that the Jays sweep Minnesota this week. So if you do that, and let's say the Yankees get swept or something crazy like that, all of a sudden you might not be as concerned with how you're dishing things out against the Yankees, right? If you're kind of three games up on them heading into that series, you might be sitting there going, okay, let's just keep Ryu rested. Let's go with Matz. And then maybe we even go with Ryu the next day. And we're giving guys like a ton of rest right now. But I do kind of like the idea of, I don't really care if it's Ryu or Matz at this point. Ryu's been good against the Yankees, but Matz has been better out of late. So whatever. I do like the idea of making sure you get Robbie Ray in for that third game against New York, because then if you do that, it's 1, 2, 3, likely only 4 or 5 days off and then a potential wild card game. Yep. You would want Robbie Ray ready for that one. So I think that's the way you need to go. You need to choose between one of Ryu or Matz to start game one against the Yankees. And then you go through from there. The other thing that could potentially set up, if you go Ray on the Thursday against New York in the final game of that New York series, you start Manoah Friday, Saturday, second last game of the year. You're going with one of Ryu or Matz, maybe not ideal, but you're going to that one. And if there is any sort of situation where it's a must win on Sunday against Baltimore, you would have Jose Barrios on his normal rest ready to go.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, the whole thing is designed for basically what it was, is that they've done this thing so that Ray is no matter what pitching in the wild card game when it comes to it, which will be, I think, on the 5th of October. And then on the 4th of October is the potential one game 163. And given the way things are going with the Red Sox, Yankees and the Jays, like there's a pretty fair chance there's a tie and they have to go and play some game 163 somewhere to figure out who's moving on to the wild card game, which is fucking insane, but that's possible. So you want to have Barrios there on his normal rest. That's kind of what we got set up. And the other thing, circling back to the Ryu-Matz conversation, is Ryu, as you said, has been great against the Yankees this year. Just recently, before his two terrible starts against Baltimore and Minnesota, he had that 6 innings of 3 hits, no earned runs against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. But Matz has also been really good against the Yankees as well. In 2 games, both at Yankee Stadium, the first game was back in May. He went 6 2/3, 6 hits, 1 earned run, 10 strikeouts. And then in September, again in Yankee Stadium, in that same series, 6 innings, seven hits, one earned run, six strikeouts. Like, he's been fantastic against the Yankees, so I'm comfortable probably with either of those two going against New York. I don't know if there's a clear advantage. I'd probably lean towards Mats right now, just because he's been better as of late. But I mean, really, you can't go wrong either with Ryu, who's been good against the Yankees, and he has, you know what, like, it's gonna be like 11, 12 days of rest at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we'll probably get into this a little bit more on the next podcast as well, because they do have the four games against the Minnesota Twins coming up here. Here's what they'll be facing, at least against Minnesota. In game one, it's going to be Michael Pineda. He's 7-8 with a 3.74 ERA. Not a terrible season by any stretch of the imagination. In game two, it is going to be Ober. He's got an ERA of 4.34. On Saturday, I think the Twins are still TBD. They might be going bullpen game in that one. And then on Sunday in the series finale, the Jays are going to be going up against Jax. So Griffin Jax, he has not been good this year. He's got a 6.75 ERA. He hasn't faced the Jays yet this year, but in his last four starts, he's given up a combined 14 earned runs in 18 innings pitched. Like,
imagine
he's
if
bad.
It was 18 pitches. Every single pitch is going up the stage.
Literal batting practice.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have to take three or four in the series. They have to. I mean, the one game that's losable is the Pineda game. I guess he was pretty good against the Jays last time. Fuck, I don't know why. He just was. Maybe that's a losable game, but let's be serious here. Like, Minnesota has no pitching. They can hit, but they have all their good starters going.
I will say this. The Jays didn't have their A game at the Trop. They need to have it in this series against Minnesota. Us as podcasters didn't have our A game in this one. We stunk it up. We had some sort of weird Trop effect. We couldn't string together a sentence for a lot of this. We need to be better after the series against Minnesota as well, Coonsie.
We do. I blame the Trop. It's the fault of the Trop.
Yeah.
It's the House of Horrors. Like, we, so for the listener, just to be open and honest, we had to re-record the Up Next segment because we couldn't figure out who was pitching on what day in the New York series. And we had to go in the notes.
Yeah, we mapped it out.
We had to write it out and count. I had to count on my hands when Robbie Ray would be starting and whether it made sense for him to pitch in the New York series. That's how fucked we are right now.
It was a shit show. Yeah, but we're ready to bounce back when we record on Monday to recap what we hope is a four-game sweep of the Minnesota Twins. For the Sports Closet, for Twig and Berries, and for DoorDash, that's where the promo code BJNPODDD gets first-time users 25% off and no delivery fees. Thanks for tuning in. We promise we'll be better on Monday, and we hope you'll tune in then again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.